For over 50 years, they redefined rock. The spirit lives on.
Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson. Rush. Live 50-something tour. Sign up for pre-sale access at Ticketmaster. Legends don't stop. They evolve. Rush.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Daniel Mahoney, senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, a senior visiting fellow at Hillsdale College, professor emeritus at Assumption University. His most recent book is The Persistence of the Ideological Lie, The Totalitarian Impulse Then and Now. Daniel, a very good evening to you. The topic at hand is nationalism, or the nation state. And it is a philosophical inquiry we're engaging in, one that's introduced by a book that was published in 2018, and you emphasize it in your most recent article at Civitas Institute, Civitas Outlook, the publication. The Virtue of Nationalism by Yoram Hazani, published in 2018, now before us. I go immediately to the critics when you raise the word nationalism. The first is blood and soil nationalism. Mr. Hazani is not welcoming blood and soil nationalism. What is that meant to represent? Why is it a roadblock to people to talk about the nation state? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening to you, John. I think it's a roadblock, and one of the larger points I tried to make in my Civitas Outlook piece is that no real good comes from a simple conflation of the nation, which can serve very honorable and constructive purposes, and nationalism, which is almost by definition, at least in some quarters, understood in its most pathological and ill-desired forms. And blood and soil nationalism, it's a term that arose, I think, in the 19th century in the context of Bismarck's statecraft. But it's the notion that one's loyalty is literally rooted. It's rooted in ethnic identification. It's rooted in a narrow sense of one's own. People would often, scholars, but also citizens and advocates would often distinguish the civic nation, which is much broader and can accommodate people of a much broader set of backgrounds, with blood and soil nationalism, which is essentially a rooting national identification in a particular ethnicity or maybe even race. I think blood and soil nationalism, if we really have to ask ourselves how many blood and soil nationalists there really are. I think when people denounce blood and soil nationalism, they often have in mind the kind of radicalization of nationalism that we saw in National Socialism.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
National Socialism, we have to even raise a question. In the end, the National Socialists wanted a global imperium. The Third Reich would lord authority over other inferior races and people. So it would become a imperium then dominated by the ethnic or racial nation. And in my piece, I quote the great the conservative political philosopher Roger Scruton, who was very talented, a great man of letters, but he was a great theorist and defender of the nation. But he said, you know, love of nation is a desire to defend one's own and everything valuable about it. Blood and soil nationalism is a desire to subordinate others, to make war on others because they're different. So I think when a lot of people who have a knee-jerk reaction to nationalism, when they don't even want to hear the word or they don't want to even talk about the nation, which is sullied by some kind of linguistic conceptual identification with nationalism, they're forgetting the possibility that there can be other forms of national identification that are much broader. I'll give you an example. There was a big debate about nationalism, philosophical and historical debate between Ernst Renan, the 19th century French philosopher and man of letters, and David Strauss, who was a German historian and writer. And it was over the fate of Alsace-Lorraine. And as you know, the people of Alsace-Lorraine, large parts of it at least, were German-speaking. Yeah. And yet for centuries, they had been part of France, and they identified emotionally, patriotically with France, despite being a Germanic-speaking people. And Ernst Renan defended in a famous 1871 essay called Qu'est-ce qu'une nation? What is a nation? He said the nation is a daily plebiscite of identification and loyalty. It's where your heart goes. It's where your loyalty goes. It can't just be that the people of Alsace-Lorraine are of German ethnicity and speak German, and therefore they're destined to be part of the Reich. And David Strauss defended a more a more humane version of blood and soil nationalism. But Ernst Renan famously said, if you take that too far, you will end up with zoological wars. And what he meant by that, you'll just treat people as if they belong to a tribe or a race, or and they're loyal to their own, and you deny common humanity. And one of the points I make in my Civitas Outlook essay, I quote the French political philosopher Pierre Manon, who's also a theorist of the nation. He said, look, to arrive at a state where the nation was identified with homicidal aversion to other peoples and nations, you had to reject the deepest wellsprings of the Western tradition. The biblical religion, Greek philosophy, the modern enlightenment, the sense of common humanity. So one thing I tried to do in my essay is make distinctions. And it's true, there is such thing as blood and soil nationalism, but it hardly exhausts the idea of the nation. There are also moderate forms of nationalism that are tied to those broader spiritual and cultural goods I just alluded to. But I also quote a wonderful French philosopher, theologian, a Jesuit, Gaston Fassard, who wrote a book defending the nation against nationalism in 1936. And he had a bon mot that sticks very close to my mind and heart. He said, the nation is too important to be left to the extreme nationalists, and peace is too important to be left to the pacifists. I'm sort of open, those of us, and I include myself, who want to defend what I call humane national loyalty and understand self-government is inextricably tied with national self-government. I'm of an open mind whether or not we ought to use the word nationalism precisely for the issue you raise. Is the term nationalism too sullied by a pathological version of blood and soil nationalism? Do we have to make greater distinctions? But also in my essay, I say, it was George Orwell in 1941 who first introduced in an essay called The Lion and the Unicorn, well worth the reading. He defended humane patriotism against nationalism. But I said that could be too facile. All patriotism good, all nationalism bad, because that doesn't make distinctions either. Because in this day and age, I think to be a patriot of France, one has to defend the honor and independence and liberty of France. To be an American patriot, you don't want to see American sovereignty sort of gobbled up by a world state or that kind of thing. So my piece really aimed to make distinctions and get us thinking about this without providing a definitive answer.
There is another roadblock we must deal with, Professor, when we come back. Isolationism is the charge against those who preach the nation state or nationalism. And I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.